from KQED.
Support for the California Report comes from Wharton San Francisco's Executive MBA program, delivering a rigorous academic experience immersed in the unique Bay Area ecosystem and access to a globally connected network. Wharton.upenn.edu. The California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
On today's California Report magazine, how teen chefs from a tiny high school in Plumas County beat out big city foodies to become the state cooking champs.
Yeah, there is this one team, their entree, it was lobster. And we use cheap fish.
And we'll hear about a pair of high school sweethearts whose twisted path brought them together in Los Angeles after nearly four decades apart.
When I saw him at the airport going out and he was walking towards me and I said, oh my God, this is for real? Oh, he's still cute.
Plus, we listen in on a conversation in three languages between three generations of the same family in Fresno. I'm Sasha Coca, and this is the California Report magazine. We start our show today with a story about a team of underdogs. They're not jocks. They're teenage chefs. You might expect the winners of a statewide high school culinary competition to come from one of California's foodie destinations like L.A. or San Francisco. But recently, the top prize went to tiny Greenville High School in Plumas County. Now they're preparing for the national competition this weekend. Lisa Morehouse brings us their story for the series California Foodways.
When Greenville High's team walked onto the convention floor in Pomona for the state championship, they looked like pros. Wearing chef's coats, the five students calmly navigated their 10x10 space and each other,
I'm going underneath you.
Cooking their Italian-influenced meal on just two burners and using only manual tools, no blenders allowed. They improvised when their pasta maker wouldn't attach to the table.
Listen to that sweet sizzle take us home today.
At the awards ceremony, it was clear the judges liked what they saw and tasted.
Champion goes to Greenville.
The winners stumbled up to the stage, laughing and crying in disbelief. A few weeks later, after spring break, the students are back at school, practicing in a makeshift space in the teacher's lounge. Two burners sit on top of stacked folding tables, approximating the competition layout. They tell me about the dishes that led the California Restaurant Association Foundation to hand them the win, the ones they're finessing for the national championship this weekend. Tanner Miggs makes the appetizer.
Authentic ravioli that has ricotta cheese on the inside with an arugula, sun-dried tomato, and garlic filling. Then it's coated in a brown butter sauce with shallot, sage, shiitake mushroom, and bacon.
He's cooked most of his life, but before joining the culinary team, Tanner had only ever eaten ravioli out of a can. Now he makes fresh pasta in 7 minutes. Janie Carson's in charge of the entree.
The fish is called aquapazza, which translates roughly to crazy water. So fish in a broth.
With shrimp, calamari, crushed tomatoes, and chili.
Okay, that's your 3 minutes.
Our dessert, okay. The judge came up to us and told us we knocked it out of the park.
That's Kelsey Hurd, who along with Destiny Potts is responsible for the parfait with lemon curd, pickled berries, fennel, and a pizzelle cookie. Cindy Lynn McIntosh is the team manager, keeping the cooks on track. I sit down with the team in the principal's office. The students say it was obvious which teams at the state competition came from bigger or better-funded schools.
Other schools, like, brought people to cheer them on, and they had signs, and they were all wearing the same shirts. We had three people watching us that were from here.
There is this one team who had their entree that was, it was lobster, and we used cheap fish.
What do you think that says?
I think it says that in the culinary world, it's not the, as a metaphor, it's not the paint you use, it's the way you use it.
On the surface, this win is so unlikely. Only 1,200 people live in Greenville.
It's such a small town.
Everybody knows everything.
Like, about each other.
And there aren't a lot of places for teenagers to hang out.
But it's just full of mountains and green trees, and it's almost great.
Greenville's an hour and a half drive up the Feather River Canyon from Chico, in a beautiful valley that used to be filled with lumber mills. Now, with fewer jobs, the town has more retirees and a shrinking high school, only 11 students in the graduating class. So in a town this small, what's the food scene like?
You eat a lot of your own livestock, cows or pigs and stuff.
But it's like eating local meat, I guess.
There's two restaurants. Actually, there's three. We just got a new one.
A pizza parlor and two cafes. But maybe its size actually led to Greenville's win. Students here wear many hats. Destiny says culinary team members all perform in the school band and four of the five play sports.
In bigger schools, you're kind of separated. Like, there's like the jocks and the band geeks, but like everybody does everything here.
Tanner adds,
we're set with the mind game of like how to win, all five of us.
Hours of practice and performance pressure don't faze the team. And Destiny says, they're practically family.
All of us have grown up with each other. I've known these people my entire life.
I think your water's boiling.
Moving hot pan behind you.
And it shows when they cook.
Once you go around the inside of the dough, then go around the outside of the edge.
Greenville High's offered culinary classes for decades, and teacher Judy Dolphin's taken teams to the state competition since 2011, placing second twice.
Okay, I think your fish is done. You better start plating.
Yeah, it's been over 3 minutes.
It only takes me about 5 minutes to plate.
Great, you've got 5 minutes.
The kids maybe roll their eyes a bit, but it's clear they've got so much love for their teacher. Here's Tanner.
Oh, she's a firecracker. She's a firecracker. She's driven, she loves her job, and she knows how to teach us. And she can be overwhelming, but it's so worth it. In the long run. She's the heart of this school.
After Greenville's statewide win, the whole town went nuts. The school even changed the date of its prom, originally scheduled for the same time as nationals in South Carolina this weekend. The students, two of whom have never been on a plane, say they're just excited to be somewhere new, to taste Southern cooking. And teacher Judy Dolphin?
I want it to be fun for them and just the experience of being clear across the United States, you know, putting your feet in the Atlantic Ocean. And if they don't place, it doesn't matter. I want them to learn from it and build their confidence and put their hands up and say done on time.
For the California Report, I'm Lisa Morehouse in Greenville.
And now we're going to bring you a high school love story. It's about two Filipino immigrants finding a lost love after 4 decades apart. We're calling them Tess and Marco because they're both undocumented, and they've asked us not to use their real names. Their story comes to us as part of a new series called At Risk in the Trump Era, produced in collaboration with the USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. Over the next few weeks, student reporters will explore the impact of the first 100 days of the Trump presidency on vulnerable communities in Southern California. Here's reporter Paula Mardo.
Tess and Marco were high school sweethearts in the Philippines, but only one of them knew it. It was the 1970s, and this song was blaring out of car radios across Manila.
I love her since we were in high school.
He was my buddy, and he was my best friend, and I didn't even know that he got interest on me.
Tess didn't know, partly because Marco was planning to be a priest. His Catholic family and everyone in school knew it. So even though they cared for each other, Tess and Marco stayed buddy-buddy in high school, then parted ways after graduation. But when priesthood didn't work out, Marco always kept Tess in mind.
Four times I dream of her, 1989, 1992, 98, and 2002.
Then in 2012, 37 years after graduation, they finally reconnected.
I'm always looking for her on the Facebook. I type her name and it doesn't come out.
Marco searched for his high school class and then...
Ting! Voila!
Hi, remember me? I'm adding you as a friend. You're not accepting yet.
Tess was in Los Angeles, working as a caregiver or a domestic worker for the sick and elderly. Marco was in Saudi Arabia, managing a printing press for an Arabic newspaper. Though they were 8,000 miles apart, they messaged each other almost every day.
Ingat ka po dyan. I told her, take care always and bear in mind always that I love you very much.
We felt like we're in high school again. Yeah, but it was so corny. So corny because we're already old.
And then I told her, you look old. She told me, what do you expect? Sa hirap ng pinagdaanan ko because her life is so miserable. That's why.
Before coming to America, Tess was married to an abusive husband in Manila.
He's possessive. He is hitting me emotionally, physically. He is hurting me.
To make matters worse, he left his job and gambled away their savings. Tess had to take caregiver jobs overseas to support their kids and make ends meet. She was forced to work long hours. One employer refused to feed her.
I really had to eat the dog food that time.
Tess rarely saw the money she was paid for these jobs. Later, she realized she'd been a victim of labor trafficking. When she finally got out, she followed one of her daughters who had moved to Los Angeles.
I worked from job after job. I was like homeless that time, trying to establish myself alone.
Tess got a divorce and wanted to restart her life. Marco was in a similar rut. He grew tired of living so far from friends and family in Saudi Arabia. That's when he sent Tess that fateful friend request. And after months of chatting, he saved up some money to visit her in L.A.
When I saw him at the airport going out and he was walking towards me and I said, oh my God, this is for real? Oh, he's still cute. Boog, 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 boog.
We just meet at the middle and then I kiss her. Only in cheek. I whisper here, I'm going to kneel and then propose with you to marry me. And then he's told me, no, not here. He's scared.
Tess had overstayed her visa. At that moment, she was worried she would get picked up by U.S. customs agents if they attracted too much attention. So Marco withheld his proposal.
When his visa is about to expire, I said to him, so what's your plan? You can go back. I said, no, I'm not going to leave you anymore with these things happening to you. We're going to live here.
Tess and Marco have been living together ever since. Tess is now a caregiver for employers that she says treat her well and give her fair pay. Marco is a maintenance worker and usually the house chef.
Excuse me.
Pork adobo is his specialty.
Wow, you can hear it. I need to put the cover and then wait.
We talk about Trump recently and we're thinking without immigrants in America, what's going to happen, you know? And if I get deported.
What's going to happen to me? I will not cook anymore. What's the use? I will cook and then I'm the one who will eat.
Kidding aside, Tess and Marco are at risk whether they want to admit it or not.
Open the door!
Who's this?
It's the police! Open the door!
After hearing rumors about an immigration raid targeting undocumented Filipinos, Tess and Marco attend a Know Your Rights workshop. Volunteers act out what to do if ICE comes knocking.
Basic ones. So again, let's do it again. I don't want to answer any questions.
I don't want to answer any questions.
Many in the room don't know what to do if faced with ICE agents, Marco included.
We get some ideas how to deal with the ICE. You don't have to sign anything, and you don't give them permission to search you.
After the workshop, Tess leads the group in a song. She sings, "The life of an immigrant is one long fight." Tess insists she and Marco are not afraid. But things change after they hear of an undocumented Filipino arrested by ICE and deported. This time, it's not a rumor. So now Tess and Marco are avoiding airports, trying to keep a low profile. And after I've spent months with them, they ask me to change their names for the story. There's an old saying in Tagalog, Bahala na, It means
if certain things happen, it's going to happen.
It's how Tess and Marco look at their situation. Fate brought them together, and fate will keep them together, here, no matter what.
We have established a good life here in America. We built our dream after 37 years, but if I'll be deported, I'll fight for my rights until the last breath. I'll fight for it.
Fight.
Marco sings at a makeshift karaoke bar at a local community center. Tess takes a selfie with him.
This for you.
A souvenir photo to add to their unending Facebook timeline. Another chapter in a love story 4 decades in the making.
You can dance.
For the California Report, I'm Paula Mardo in Los Angeles.
Nothing to sing, but while we're apart, don't give your heart to anyone. And don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be.
That story was produced in collaboration with the USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism. Next week, our series At Risk in the Trump Era continues with a profile of a transgender 20-something whose home life has become more hostile since the election. This month, California music fans flocked to the desert to see and be seen at the Coachella Music Festival. But here on our show, we like to focus on some homegrown talent that might not make big headlines. Producer Susie Racho and our pop critic Steve Hockman are here to tell us about some new releases from 3 Southern California artists.
That's Night Jewel, a.k.a. Ramona Gonzalez, and she's a songwriter from Los Angeles. That's from her new album, Real High. And Steve, tell me about her. One of the things I know about her is that she went to your alma mater.
Occidental College, woohoo, go Tigers. You know, I started as a philosophy major there, but quit that. She was a philosophy major there. I don't know how much of the philosophy you hear in this, but there's definitely an artistry to it that she's taken this sort of 80s pop sound on this new album and given it some depth, given it some substance. Some of her earlier stuff had more of a conscious art nature to it. There's a little more, you know, if you go and look on YouTube some of the videos from some of her earlier stuff, there's definitely like this sort of art film kind of thing going on. But she's made a full commitment to the pop world now with this album, and I think it really works for her.
And this is her 4th record, but she seems to have done things under the radar, and Real High is on her own label. Do you think this is going to make her more known to mainstream music fans?
I sure hope so. I mean, it has the goods for it, and this is the right time for her. There's a sense of maturity and confidence to it, and she allows herself to just go with the pure pleasures of pop music and all the things that really can win a big audience.
That's Night Jewel. The new record is Real High. And now some sunshine pop from Derek Anderson.
Guess you almost had to be there, thumbing through the pages of my life. Is there nothing more to see there? Take another chance to get it right.
Send Me Down a Sign is from Derek Anderson's new album, A World of My Own. And the first few notes of that song remind me of another L.A. pop outfit, the Bangles. And that's probably not too far off because he's actually their bass player.
He is indeed. I mean, if anybody who's seen the Bangles in the last decade or so has seen him, kind of the smiling guy off to the side, the guy Bangle. And also he's a core member of the Wild Honey Orchestra. Now, this is this collective around L.A. that has been doing these tribute shows. They'll do like complete Beatles albums and Big Star Third. And they just did one to the Band. And it's all these all-stars from sort of the power pop world primarily. And a lot of those people show up on this album with him, his first solo album after a fairly long career as a bass player. The album's called A World of My Own, but he brings in to his world, all 3 of the other Bangles. He brings in 3 Cowsills, a bunch of other people in it. And it does have that, you know, that real 60s sound. There's a lot of Beatles in this.
Stay up high. And happiness.
record's just pure pop. I mean, anybody who's kind of a fan of power pop is going to get this record just from, you know, the first few songs. But is there anything deeper than that? Because I know that power pop, you know, kind of gets slammed for being not very deep.
To some extent in the power pop world, there's a, hey, it's not broken, don't fix it. You know, it was great from the Beatles on. Why mess with it? Why not just draw on that depth and that power that's inherently there? And I think that's what Derek does. I don't think there's a song called Something New, and I'm not going to say that he is giving us something new, but he's sure giving it really strongly.
That's Derek Anderson with A World of His Own. And I know you have one more release you want to mention before we go, right?
I do, and this is Adam Turchin. It's an album called Manifest Destiny, and it's about his story of his journey from Philadelphia to L.A. to build a music career. He's a sax player and a composer. When he got to L.A., he met Terrace Martin, the producer and musician who we have reviewed here before, and Terrace brought him into Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly sessions, and he and Kamasi Washington and others were such a big part of the jazz element of that, which, to be honest, I think is missing from Kendrick's new album, Damn. But here Adam is talking about his journey. And sacrifice, know that I put my soul in it. If I said it, I meant it, my word. Know that I would have died if I stayed with it, try to keep me from freedom. Now, fear wasn't a factor, a master of carbon DM. I bet it all on a vision, and most of me was pointless. I see what most won't now. I'm a voice for the voiceless. None of the. Here's a guy you can hear through it how happy he is that he made this trip, that he is fulfilling this destiny of his.
Steve Hawkman is the California Report's pop music critic. You can read more about Adam Turchin, Derek Anderson, and Night Jewel at californiareport.org. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Susie.
Now we're going to listen in on an exchange between three generations in three different languages. It's the final episode in our StoryCorps series featuring conversations between Latinos in the San Joaquin Valley. If you're like so many Californians with immigrant roots, you may not speak the same language as other generations in your family. Like 12-year-old Angelina Flores, who we'll hear now speaking in English, asking her father Luis to relay questions to her grandfather, Julian, about his life in Mexico. We've got voiceover actors translating for Luis and Julian.
Dad, can you ask Grandpa about like his life back then when he was young, like really like my age?
Okay, apa, Angelina pregunta.
Angelina's asking, what was your childhood like in Mexico?
Lo que yo empecé a trabajar al 7 años, casa un niño y.
Yeah, I started working when I was 7, just a child, and I had no other choice. I would deliver lunch to laborers. I didn't have a chance to go to school. That's why I can't read. I couldn't speak Spanish. I really suffered. I grew up with our language. It's called Mixteco.
So, can you ask me about, like, the language that they speak, like, Mixtec, right? How do you say it? Mixteco, like.
Dad, could you say in Mixteco that you're really happy to have your family here in California, in your language?
Did Grandpa ever get teased because he didn't, like, know, like fluent Spanish? Like, did he ever get bullied because of that by anyone?
Oh, yeah, I suffered a lot because sometimes the bosses would send me to get something and I didn't know how to ask for it.
What did they eat? Because, like, you know, now we eat, like, mole and stuff, but did they eat the same things that we eat now that Mom makes?
No, en mis tiempos. En mis tiempos, mira.
No, back then there were times when we didn't eat very well. There just wasn't enough. We didn't know what it was like to enjoy a soda or eat meat. It was hard for us to even get a tortilla. We ate to survive, not to get full.
Like, what did he wear, like? Because wasn't it, like, people were poor back then? Like, not very, like, poverty? Like, what would they do, like, wear?
Caminaba descalzo.
I'd walk around barefoot without any sandals. We called huaraches. That's what people wear there. I'd take a bath, but then put the same clothes back on because I didn't have any other clothes.
Can you ask him, how was it weird coming over here to California, like America, basically? Like, how weird was it? Did he miss his family back there? Like, or...
The first time I came, I was 16. I came with some friends. I really missed my family, my mom, everybody. I was picking strawberries in Carlsbad near Oceanside.
How was it for you, Dad, coming over here? Because he came, and then how was it for you, basically, with all your little siblings and then, like, your older sisters and stuff like that?
When I came, Angelina, to the U.S., I was about 10 years old. For me, it was like a big adventure.
Ask him about how does he think his life is different from yours.
I'm so proud of you, my son. I see that you're giving such a good life to your daughters. They have everything they need. Even if you're working hard to give it to them, it's not like when I raised you. I wanted to give you more, but I couldn't, my son.
Dad, how do you think it affected our life being from Mexico, like our culture? What if we were just like from, like if we were just American, how would that change how we grew up and like how our customs are?
I think it would have been a bit different because you wouldn't have this culture. You wouldn't have this history that your grandfather's telling us about, how he grew up and how he suffered to bring us here to the United States.
Can you tell him I want to thank him because like without him being from Mexico, we wouldn't like... sort of have all this like culture, and I think it's really special that we have all this.
Angelina says thank you.
You don't have to thank me, mijita. You know I'm proud of you. I never thought I'd be able to sit here and tell you this story. I'm really grateful. Thank you, mija. Thank you.
Gracias, mijita.
That conversation between Angelina, Luis, and Julian Flores is part of a project with the Henry Madden Library at Fresno State. It was produced by the California Report with interviews recorded by StoryCorps, a national nonprofit whose mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories in order to build connections between people and create a more just and compassionate world. The project was co-sponsored by Fresno State's Office of the President, the College of Arts and Humanities, the College of Social Sciences, and Valley Public Radio. And that's our show this week. The California Report magazine is a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Our technical producer is Seal Muller, and we had additional engineering from Katie McMurrin. Special thanks this week to Sandy Tolan and Karen Lowe at USC. The California Report's senior editor is Victoria Maulion, and our editorial team includes Monte Carlo, Sarah Craig, David Marks, Miranda Leitzinger, Susie Racho, Ingrid Becker, Ethan Lindsay, and Holly Kernan. I'm Sasha Coca. Thanks for listening. This is the California Report magazine.
California Foodways is made possible with support from Cal Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Visit www.calhum.org. Support for the California Report comes from the James Irvine Foundation. Accepting nominations now for the 2018 James Irvine Foundation Leadership Awards at irvine.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.